Chicago podcast 13.42.27.
Not even the right podcast.
Welcome.
It's Demgo Radio, but who cares?
What is it? Is it?
Okay, I don't know.
Whatever it is.
How do you want to brand this?
It's one? Whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's National Signing Day. Michigan has reaped the bounty of their Big Ten championship, and we're here to talk about it with Seth Fisher, Alex Drain, and Steve Lorenz. How's everybody doing?
Great. Great, guys. Good day.
All right. So I think we should lead off with the fact that the number one recruit in the country signed with an HBCU.
I think it's awesome.
Because
isn't it awesome?
Well, it's Barstool related, so it's not actually awesome. It's but it's very strange, and I think it indicates that there's been a pretty big shift in a lot of different things. So you see Texas A&M roaring up the recruiting standings. You have Dabo Swinney complaining every day, all day, about how college football is at a terrible spot because he lost both his coordinators, and now he's not recruiting at the level he used to because the playing field's a little more level. So I think you are seeing some initial indicators that the NIL era will be more open. There won't be this sort of cabal of teams like the Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Clemson triumvirate who are just pushing NIL before NIL so hard that they are collecting all the five stars. So now you get some, like, I think the number two or three kid in the country is going to Missouri. Like, There's some variance here that you haven't seen recently. It's not like those teams don't have good classes either, but you know, there's a sort of a spreading of the wealth, I'd say.
The one that I noticed was Xavier Nwankwo, like a five star or like top 50, top 25, depending on the site, safety who's from Des Moines, Iowa, and chose Iowa over Ohio State, and like. That's the kind of thing that would not normally happen, but now we can go to Iowa and be like the hometown superstar, and that can make sense.
Yeah. I mean, Iowa did keep AJ Epenesa at home too, so that does happen. So yeah, it's up in the air. Anyway, let's start off talking about Michigan signees. We have, I think, 24 guys who we expect to sign today. 25 if you count Andrew Gentry. I have a beef with everybody who's putting Andrew Gentry in the 2020 class. He's gonna be a freshman this year. It's like he's part of this class. Can we just agree on that?
I mean, sure.
All right.
No, I'll give it to you, Brian. No,
thank you.
He would be the highest ranked recruit in that 2018 class.
Well, instead he's the highest ranked OL in this class because functionally, like he's gonna come in. He's gonna be a freshman. He's going to need a year to recover from being on a mission for 2 years before he's got any chance to see the field. He's functionally freshman, but that's neither here nor there. Let's start with quarterback. Michigan picks up two. Jaden Dinegal is a guy who has been in the class for a long time. Out of Arizona, I believe, has some dual threat to him. A little bit of a flyer, as I think anybody was going to have to be in a class after J.J. McCarthy. But a guy that Seth wrote up and knows more about than I do.
Yeah, he's not from Arizona, but I can understand why, because like he's from the other side of the mountains in L.A.
That's right.
So like, yeah. it's basically it's something on the way to Las Vegas. If you get lost on the way to Las Vegas, I have a friend who rented a Tesla once and drove through that town accidentally, because it was the only place that you could get like electric power for the entire Death Valley.
That's
my scouting on Jaden Dinegal. He's kind of a Wilton Spate type, big body dude. Michigan had him up for a throwing session and liked his throwing mechanics. The complaint about him, I think, is that he was like oversized, like he had to lose a bunch of weight. Me losing a bunch of weight and him losing a bunch of weight are very different things. It's like this is a very, you know, is a cut teenager. So, that was one of the things that he was like in the 240s or 250s, and I think he got down to the 230s, and Michigan jumped on him. His star has been kind of falling, but Michigan likes that he's really smart. He also owns a tortoise. That's the last piece of information.
So is there like I don't want to like get ahead of myself here, but we are talking about quarterbacks in the class after J.J. McCarthy. So multi-positionality is something that I think they might be looking for. Is there
not with Dinegal? I think the idea was to get a quarterback in this class because J.J. McCarthy is probably going to be here 3 years in the NFL. And you know, the guy behind him, you remember, you know, you bring in Drew Henson, he's going to be here 3 years and he goes to the Yankees. But like, you get that kind of recruit. If you have John Navarre in the next class. John Navarre is your starter for 3 or 4 years.
Sure. Steve, what was the vibe about his ranking? We've heard a lot of people say that like he didn't really have a great senior season. Is that the case? Was that something that you guys heard through the grapevine?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I think there were some question marks about him. Ironically, so he was favored, Michigan State favorite on the crystal ball for a while in that recruitment. I'd say that Michigan State actually, I think, kind of cooled on him a little bit. They ended up getting Caden Hauser out of St. John Bosco, where Josh Rosen played. I'd argue Hauser more polished prospect at this point than Denegal for sure. But I agree. I think he's both of these guys, right types of players to take, not just after J.J. McCarthy, but before Dante Moore, also in the 23 class. I mean, it's kind of you have an elite in 21. You have a big-time elite in 23 that, you know, Michigan's only offered like 2 quarterbacks in the 23 cycle, or they're really only recruiting more, honestly. So you take a couple guys in between with some upside, but maybe have a little ways to go. Denegal, yeah, not a no multi-positional with him, but with the other kid, Alex Orji, I definitely think there's some multi-positional situation with him down the road.
So that's how it's pronounced. So
let's talk about Orji. Michigan flipped him from Virginia Tech. You look at he's a guy who looks really great on highlight reels because he's got a big arm. He scrambles out of the pocket, and then he unleashes like Justin Herbert bombs to guys downfield. Flip side of that is when he's not on a highlight film, he's only completing 50% of his passes. So historically, guys with low completion percentages who enter college, they are often guys who are boomer bust prospects, like Shane Morris, Milton, the kid who went to
Joe Milton. Yeah.
Yeah, OSU a million years ago, Shane Hoff or Shane, I don't remember his name, doesn't matter. But so those are guys who, yeah, he's mobile. He ran for 1,200 yards last year. He scored 24 touchdowns. He's burly at 225. He's a guy who you could definitely see having some sort of red zone quarterback presence. But polishing him up and getting him like college ready, I think, is going to be a long-term project.
I agree. You know, both his brothers are linebackers also, and he's about the same size as they were coming out. So, yeah, I mean, I do think a true dual threat is something maybe Michigan hasn't had necessarily. He could be maybe a package guy. But a guy, like you said, Brian, he's shown flashes of some real upside. But I do agree the inconsistency, low completion percentage, yeah, is historically not a great indicator for major future success at the college level. So he's kind of an interesting piece because they're, you know, talk about a dual threat and like a guy who really could project to the defensive side of the ball. I suspect Michigan will get him to camp. He's one of those guys, get him to campus, figure it out later, see how he looks at the beginning and kind of work him in wherever they can, because he is very, very athletic for his size. And there's always something you can do with guys like that.
Yeah, I was thinking kind of Michael Barrett with him, special teams quarterback, sure, and possibly linebacker, and possibly that quote tight end position that sits in the backfield.
All right, just one running back in the class, kind of a mid-ranked three-star, CJ Stokes. Most interesting thing about him is out of South Carolina. I think he's probably the first kid from South Carolina Michigan's had since Junior Hemingway. But kind of a three-star gap filler for Michigan, as they're going to lean heavily on Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards next year. So he's a running back, so he's going to be able to get some early playing time. What's the upside there?
Good piece in 22. Strong senior season. I don't know if you guys saw his interview today during his signing day ceremony. Very driven. Like, it was really cool. Kind of easy kid. If you watch the video, it'll be really easy to root for in Ann Arbor. And, yeah, he's only the 7th kid out of South Carolina to ever sign with the program. It was basically the Goodwin brothers and then some of the Rich Rod guys, you know, with JT Floyd and Quentin Washington and Junior Hemingway, those guys, right? So, yeah, not an area where Michigan ever really recruits, period, let alone recruits hard. So, I think one of the knocks, one of the questions on him has been his top line speed, you know, but I would say he was one of the first 2 or 3 backs that Hart extended an offer to after he took the job in that cycle. So something about him they really like. I think he's a good one-cut kind of kid. But again, I think there's maybe a little bit of limited upside as far as the speed factor goes. But we've seen, you know, Michigan likes guys that gain positive yardage, guys that can get first downs. I'm wondering if maybe that's where they're kind of thinking with him. He does have some ability out of the backfield with his hands too. But yeah, I mean, we see them going, looking at a couple of grad transfer or transfer candidates at back also. So, you know, I'm not sure they're going to go for another scholarship back in the 22 class. If they get a kid like Trey Annum out of the Arizona State transfer, you know, I think they're looking for five. So Stokes might be the only recruit they sign in this cycle at that position.
Yeah, the thing about him is he's not just out of South Carolina. He is like, his dad's been working for the University of South Carolina for like 20 years. Like, this is, he goes to school with all like the coach's kids, and like, and this is like South Carolina family. And I think they just kind of figured they were going to, you know, walk in and take him. They had a staff change, but you know, that probably opened the door for
his, I think his former high school coach is on the staff, if I remember right. They hired his former high school coach. And I really think it's funny. I totally agree. I think they thought they would have him in their back pocket throughout the cycle, right? He goes up to Michigan, has a great visit, commits. I think even then, I think they thought we can bide our time, we can wait and push. But no, I mean, he stayed, you know, solid throughout. I don't know how hard South Carolina maybe went after him after he verbalized. I know they did for a short time right after. I don't know if that really continued or not. But yeah, I mean, yeah, he's right out of the heart of Columbia. I mean, that's very rare, you know, to do something like that for Michigan.
At wide receiver, Michigan picks up, J.J. McCarthy's teammate in Tyler Morris, 6-foot guy out of Nazareth Academy, who's ranked at just outside the composite top 100. Obviously should have quite a bit of chemistry with McCarthy if he can break through early, which, given what Michigan's receiving core is projected to look like next year, is going to be kind of a tall order. But, you know, he's a guy who's gone to the AA game. He's, until this recent surge, he was pretty clearly, I think, the second best recruit in the class, and has some upside for down the road.
Really, I kind of reminds me of Ronnie Bell a little bit when he's healthy. You know, and obviously the ACL stuff, not what it used to be 10 years ago. I mean, I think he'll be back full force probably for fall camp. Again, I don't think he's a year one guy just because of the injury, but long term, I don't think it really limits what he's able to do. I like him as an all-around type kid. I think he's probably not been talked about enough. You guys know we've been doing this, like watching recruiting, seeing recruiting long enough where a highly ranked guy who commits really early in the process, it's not a big recruiting battle. They kind of almost get lost in the shuffle when you're talking about guys that can be impact players, because it wasn't like an exciting recruitment to win him. There was no big announcement, you know, on signing day or near signing day. I think Morris is kind of a guy that's going to get slept on naturally because of that. But yeah, that rapport with McCarthy, I think, was really big in Michigan's initial interest in him and him initially being interested in return. But also, you know, you talk about how well Michigan's done in the Chicago area and Illinois with Sherrone Moore, Josh Gattis. You know, Morris is kind of another guy. I know Notre Dame was really interested there when he committed. So a big win recruiting when it happened, but also a guy I think really can be a dynamic sort of all-around kind of kid at the receiver position.
Yeah, your guys comped him to Garrett Wilson, which I thought was because he
that's a little
he
much. Was like an, yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's yeah. an Olympic high jumper. He was the junior Olympics champion, actually. So like this guy's got some lift, which Ronnie Bell never really had. The guy that I compared him to.
Wait. Ronnie Bell can jump out of the gym. What are you talking about?
Okay. Apologies. Take it back. But Golden Tate was the guy that I was thinking every time I watched him, because he's just got like that silky smooth transition after he catches the ball to running with it. And I know Ronnie Bell is that as well. But like that's his game. Like the ball comes to him and like all of a sudden he's getting 6, 7, 9 yards after every single catch, even if it was just a dump down. And like that's his game. And I agree with Steve. Like this guy, because of the injury, I think too, he fell down probably another 25 spots because of that. But he should have been a 5-star. This was an incredible player, and I'm surprised that like we're not talking about him more.
One of Michigan's biggest signing day pickups was Darius Clemens, who's out of Oregon. He lived in Michigan until he was about 10, but Michigan was really coming out of nowhere for this guy. You look, go back and you look at all of his articles, and they're all about Auburn and Oregon and Tennessee and various places. And then they get lucky with Mario Cristobal leaving, and he opens it up, and Michigan looks like a pretty good landing space. They get him. He's 6'3", another guy just outside the top 100 on the composite. More of a catching radius guy who you hope can like be more Nico Collins than Daryl Stoneham, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, Clemens, he's a friend of Andrel Anthony, and from my understanding, that played a pretty big role down the stretch, especially when they got him on campus. The camaraderie there, they were childhood friends in the Lansing area, and everybody raves about Clemens's combination of speed and size. And we had a little bit of a dispute about what his 40 time actually is. The 24/7 verified time says 4.37, but we'll... We're not sure about that one, but regardless, a really cool package of skills. And unlike Amorian Walker, who we're going to talk about, who's also a bigger receiver, Clemens is already a little more filled out, which I think could give him the chance to play a little bit quicker than Walker, provided the huge backlog at wide receiver depth chart. But he's a really exciting prospect too.
Upside. Yeah, I mean, I like they were recruiting a kid named Caleb Webb out of Powder Springs, Georgia. I thought he was a little more polished, receiver they're going after. But I think Clemens and Walker are both big upside guys, which when you talk about that depth at receiver, I think it's they're two perfect fits. Yeah, this is a great recruitment for Michigan. Like, this was a kid Michigan wanted very, very badly, very early in the process. He eliminated them. He released a top five like months and months ago. Eliminated Michigan. I suspect he was among those who was either being Michigan was probably negatively recruited about the 2 and 4, like one of those kind of guys, right? Like, I don't know if Michigan even like Cristobal gets fired, which obviously was a huge factor because he was signing. If Cristobal's still at Oregon, he signs with the Ducks, no doubt about it. But I think this one maybe more than almost any of them, maybe the Derek Moore one too. Michigan beats Ohio State, wins the Big Ten. That makes a big difference in this recruitment. It's why they were able to get right back in and pretty much get him on campus for the weekend and flip this, do a total 180 on this recruitment. I think when Cristobal originally left, I think Auburn was convinced they were going to get him. I mean, it was Oregon-Auburn for a long time. You know, Cristobal leaves. I think Auburn just assumed they were going to get him. I know our Auburn guy put a crystal ball in almost right away, and Michigan gets him on campus. You know, they have the connections that were discussed. And but Josh Gattis, Broyles winner. I mean, all these things that we're not used to, Michigan being able to pitch on the recruiting trail, kind of come to fruition and pay off. And I think Clemens is one that it might have mattered with more than almost anybody.
We've mentioned Amorian Walker a couple of times. So he flips from Michigan on National Signing Day after sort of a six-month will. Notre Dame on National Signing Day after sort of a six-month will he or won't he process where Sam Webb is beating the table the whole time. And he's a beanpole. He's 6'4". He's 175 pounds, or at least listed at that. He's a guy who has a lot of upside. Bama was poking around him for a little bit in an attempt to flip him just before early signing day. And, you know, it's another guy who's catching radius and speed and the ability to be a downfield threat.
He's got a gazelle type thing to him. I think the thing with Amorian Walker is, to me, he could be as effective as a defensive back as he could at receiver. I think it's really more Michigan. We see what they did at defensive back. They're not really, there's not really a huge need there with the other guys they signed, I think. So they plug him in at receiver where, you know, he's got high upside at both positions, but yeah, I mean, he's one that I think he'll take longer than Clemens will because of that physical difference. But he may have an even higher ceiling. This kind of became a theme this cycle, but this dude's underrated. I think we still have him in an 87. I don't know how the hell he's only an 87, honestly. I mean, just with the physical, just the speed at that size alone, you know, and again, he's not filled out yet, but just that the frame and the speed at that frame alone, to me, is way, way better than an 87. I mean, there's a reason Notre Dame worked so hard to try to keep him in the fold. As you mentioned, Alabama made a late push there the last couple weeks, actually. It didn't really get reported a ton. Probably should have gotten reported more You don't Bama doesn't host kids for officials unless they're a take. I mean, it's just the way it is. Alabama doesn't need to waste time hosting kids that they're not going to take for official visits because they're going to get guys either way. You know, so there's definite upside there. And props to Sam. Did a hell of a job on this recruitment. I mean, that was one of his, since I've been working with him, one of his best jobs on any recruitment. And to wake up and finally get to, you know, for it to go public that he was in Ponchatoula at the announcement today was a pretty funny moment on the site and stuff. So he did a hell of a job on it and really had a beat on it from the get-go, you know, and whatever the kid was telling Notre Dame, I don't know. We've been confident in Michigan for a long time, you know, obviously spearheaded by what Sam knew or whatever, but either way, I know Michigan felt really good as well. So yeah, a nice win though. You know, you think with Marcus Freeman having all that recruiting mojo, maybe they'd be able to keep him in the fold. You know, it's just like they hung on to, I think he was the only one, or no, sorry, CJ Williams flipped to USC, but held on to almost everybody in that class, despite Brian Kelly, the winningest coach in program history, leaving. You know, you'd think there may have been some appeal to maybe stay, but no, Michigan did a hell of a job. So,
I have a 3-year-old here. Tight end Marlon Klein is a German dude living in Georgia. And he said that he committed to Michigan because it felt like Germany. It was really clean.
Did not show so him State Street.
So, Klein is an interesting guy because he just started playing football recently, as a lot of European guys who end up in the States. Yeah, he's 6'6". He's got a lot of upside. Does need to fill out a bunch and is probably just another project for the tight end room where, you know, how Luke Schoonmaker sort of came along this year and now you're kind of excited to see what Luke Schoonmaker is going to look like next year. I feel like that's Marlon Klein in 2 or 3 years.
I agree. You know, he's a kid. Yeah, the Germany thing. I think he said, you know, a lot of, because he's playing ball, like it's basically on the North Carolina, Georgia border, or one of the Carolinas, Georgia border. Actually mentioned Michigan's weather as a plus in his recruitment because it reminds him of the weather in Germany. It's kind of like when we're talking to kids that are interested in Michigan, we don't normally hear the weather as a plus. It's either not a plus or it's just not mentioned, period. So again, there are a lot of high upside kids in this class. That's one of the upsides to having like depth at a lot of positions. You know, Michigan's recruited tight end really well, and the other tight end they've recruited, I think, is closer to being field ready. But Klein is a guy I'd be interested if he ever had any verified times, what they'd be, because I know that's where Michigan, you know, he's a kid that Sherrone Moore started recruiting at first. And after Jay Harbaugh took over at tight end, they continued. You know, sometimes new assistant takes a position, maybe it'll, you know, reset the board a little bit. But I know they really liked what they saw. His high school team, his offense doesn't really do a ton to maybe showcase his ability as a tight end. But I know Michigan went down and saw him a couple times, and they're really excited about him. You know, and he was another kid that stuck through, had Georgia offer, I think North Carolina. He had some really good offers when he committed, you know, not afterwards. I mean, there were a lot of schools that really liked him. So, but yeah, upside, I agree. Luke Schoonmaker, great, great comparison, because I think that's what his trajectory is probably going
to
be.
So I just like the fact that he goes to Rabat Gap Nakuchi School. That's I like that. It's a very amazing school name. The other tight end, as mentioned, is Colson Loveland, who's out of Idaho. You'll be unsurprised to learn he is the number one recruit in Idaho, ranked just outside the top 300, and just has the exact same profile as Klein, a developmental Harbaugh tight end who's got an appealing combination of size and speed, but is going to need a couple years to put it together.
I don't know about that with Loveland. He's like, he's a lot more built than I think people realize. I mean, playing in Idaho is going to be a little bit of a transition.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah. So, yeah, like, he's farther along than Klein is, but he's not going to be a plug-and-play guy.
Right. If they needed a jumbo receiver right away, though, I mean, that kid can get up. And like that, his whole tape is just him making ridiculous catches. They're like, okay, let's put all of Idaho on him. Okay, let's add Wyoming as well. And they can't cover. I mean, it's a useful player right away, but I think like Eric Gall would be the comp that I would make, just because, you know, fast, and has that build to become a better blocker, but you know, starting out is very much a flex receiver. Steve?
Steve? Did we lose Steve?
Yeah. Oh. No, I'm here.
All right.
So, okay, sorry. I was, my connection was kind of poop for a second there, but I would argue, I think Colson Loveland, you know, we just talked about upside with Klein. I think Colson Loveland, if I had to rank the prospects that Michigan was most excited about in the class, I think Loveland is top three or four as far as his potential goes. A classic kid who, yeah, if he wasn't playing in Idaho, you know, if he was in, I don't even want to say California, Florida, or Texas. I mean, if he was in like Missouri or Tennessee or something, we're talking about a top 150, you know, type kid. I think the fact that he still is a four-star both on the composite and by our analysts says a lot about what even limited scouting shows about his ability. His offense, he was definitely one of those literally do everything for his team kind of guys on offense. I know Bryce went out and saw him for a game. They would split him out and he would be triple covered. They would literally put three guys on him and they would just throw the football up and then he would catch it and then score. And that was like, it was like nothing. So I like Klein, don't get me wrong, but man, they are super, super excited about Colson Loveland. You know, if he got the chance to showcase his ability at one of the All-Star games, I don't believe he got an invite. If he was able to, I think he's a guy that would make an even, because he made a nice move in the rankings the last like 2 or 3 months. I think he's the type of kid that would make an even bigger move if he ever got the opportunity to showcase his abilities on like a, you know, a national type stage.
On the offensive line, Michigan picks up Andrew Gentry, who was originally a Virginia commit, is on a 2-year Mormon mission. And this is another situation where Michigan was fortunate that there was a coaching change, because Bronco Mendenhall retires and he immediately starts looking around. There's a fascinating article in the Deseret News about how all this went down, because when you're on a Mormon mission, you're not supposed to like talk to football coaches. So they had to like smooth some things over so Harbaugh could go to lunch with this guy. But he's 6'8", top 100 prospect in his class, you know, a obvious tackle prospect and a guy that I think Michigan was really needed, because their other two prospects in this class are kind of ranked in the roll the dice category.
Yeah, I think with Gentry, it's interesting when you watch his tape, because he's just massive. And his high school tape, especially playing in a state like Colorado, he's just sitting on the defensive lineman, whoever he's facing on every play. Just absolutely huge guy. And from a stature and frame standpoint, I think Andrew Stuber is the comp here. And I mean, Stuber's 6'7", and they got Stuber up to 335, I think, for this season. Gentry weighed in at 310 his high school senior year. He's going to be a lot less than that now. And it's going to take him a few years to really bulk back up to where they want him. But if you let him marinate, he is just the perfect mauling, run-blocking Harbaugh offensive tackle. And I know they were really high on him 2 years ago and are really happy to get him in the class now. And I mean, he's not as ready again as he was 2 years ago, but you can wait 3 years, 4 years, and this guy's going to pay off, I think. I mean, it's a really big pickup.
Brian, I think you'd be happy to know Michigan just released a class graphic for this 22 class, and Andrew Gentry is squarely in the middle of it. So,
all right, there we go.
So you win on that one. So yeah, no, was a top. I mean, was a really big time top target in 20. This isn't just them circling back on a kid because Bronco Men. I mean, they did of course circle back on him because Bronco Mendenhall left Virginia, but this is a guy they liked from the get go. This is not like a portal type pursuit of a guy that obviously has played, looks good, let's add him to the roster. This is a guy, hey, we loved him back then, we still love him now, you know, let's make another run here. And yeah, I was not surprised. You know, the a lot of thought was that BYU had finished second in that. We always felt Michigan was second. The Mendenhall move to Virginia is what sealed the deal for them. So not really super shocking. Yeah, because when Mendenhall left, I think there was a member on our board actually asked about him. And my initial response was like you said, Brian, like, how does Michigan even get in contact with him in the first place to let him know that they are interested in him? Right. I mean, that was really, to me, was the big kind of question. Obviously they were 2 days later, Harbaugh's, you know, picture with him on a visit or whatever. And then he commits right away. So, yeah, will take a little bit to get acclimated to the college game, I believe. But yeah, I like the Andrew Stuber comparison too, because they are their behemoths. Great player out of high school, though. I mean, I remember watching his film, thinking he was one of the definitely Michigan was right to make him a top priority back then. So yeah, really quietly kind of an important piece to this class. Obviously, they're still going after Josh Connerly, but you know, USC's making a run there. Washington's got that new coach smell too. So it's, you know, I think that's a little, he's delaying till February. So that's a little bit up in the air, you know? So I think to sort of supplement what they have with Gentry, because they need tackles this cycle, I think was big for them for sure.
So Alessandro Lorenzetti is the second highest ranked guy in the class. And I should say that I think I may have been a little bit harsh about him, because he's a guy who rose on 24/7. 24/7 is the site that pays the best attention. He's ranked really low on a couple other sites. And so if you're looking for guys who are underrated on the composite, I always look for guys who 24/7 picked up on later in the year, especially from places like Connecticut, where he's from, and he moves up to a 4-star late in the cycle. You know, another guy who you could make that Stuber comparison to, because he's sort of a mauling guy who's more of a right tackle than a left tackle, probably. And someone who comes out of the same area of the country.
Yeah, this guy kind of fell off the recruiting industrial complex tree and hit every blind spot on the way down. Because he's not even from Connecticut originally. He's from Quebec. And I think he only got to spend 1 year in Connecticut because of because of COVID. They canceled the season. So he's Quebecois. He's a mid-career transfer. There's no junior film because they canceled the season. And like junior film is like what these sites really use to base their rankings most of the time. Highest ranked player ever at his school in Connecticut. So he's not even at a school in Connecticut that's like used to pumping out Don Brown prospects. This is a guy that on three, the new network doesn't even have a ranking for. Like they just can't, we don't know. His recruitment was really short, but as soon as he popped, like everyone who saw his workout film got into him. I mean, I've never seen like workout film mentioned more often in a recruitment on everyone who's talking about him. Did not reciprocate any interest from the SEC, but there definitely was some. I know Penn State was interested. He stopped there. And then Michigan and Michigan State, he just wanted to play in the Big Ten. And, I mean, we might have struck gold because no one's like seen this kid other than Michigan and a couple other schools.
Georgia, right? I think Georgia offered. Mm-hmm. Definitely Penn State, Michigan State. He's another one. I actually think Michigan State had a couple crystal ball predictions in early. He goes and works out at some other programs around the country, and then the crystal ball shifts elsewhere. Probably the most likely to go in the to move to the interior of the three guys that they have. You know, I think they really hit the interior hard last cycle, but he's maybe, when I say most likely, he's that malleable guy. You know, that guy that maybe he could play in the interior, maybe he plays on the outside. I mean, it's really gonna kind of depend on what they feel about him when they actually get to work with him more often after he gets on campus. So I think this one was one, I think they felt like, yeah, like Seth said, almost like kind of like striking gold, where he was probably a casualty to an extent of COVID, as far as not having any scouting, very under-scouted, had to go to camps to really get noticed and seen. And that what that comes down to is either A, the schools you do decide to go to and camp at, because a lot of schools might not offer you based off of just word of mouth. You know, if you perform well at one camp, doesn't mean 10, 15 schools are going to offer. And B, I don't know what B was going to be. So either way, I had B lined up and then it just fell off. But either way, I do think Michigan kind of felt like they snuck in and kind of got this one, especially when they found out he was ready to end the process relatively quickly, because he plays more ball. Maybe his recruiting profile expands even more than it did, you know? So I think this was one Michigan felt pretty fortunate about, A, discovering him, and B, kind of getting it locked up quickly and never really having to worry about him. I mean, talk about a kid that was solid. Never heard a peep about him even talking to other programs.
Literally the first guy who signed this morning. He got that thing in at 6 a.m. Like, boom.
Speaking of guys who came off the board early, Connor Jones committed on Christmas Eve 2020. And he's an offensive tackle out of Colorado who also had absolutely no wavering. So another guy who the industry is not going to keep particularly close tabs on, ranks just inside the top 1,000 on the composite. And really, if you're trying to look for updated information on him, there is none.
Yeah, the latest on him is that when Michigan won the Big Ten, he was running up and down the street like a madman carrying a Michigan flag, which I did that too. So that's one of us. The other thing is his coach quote is something I'm never going to forget. Puts water in the harbor. So he had to mash up several idioms to make that one happen. But I'm going to remember that one. He puts water in the harbor. Anyway, you know, sinking ships rises all boats. I think he got to it that way. But another guy who Michigan identified early, and Michigan's been hitting that Colorado circuit a whole bunch. I mean, Gentry was one. You know, they got a couple guys on campus now, and Connor Lee, I think, comes from that same program of, you know, all these dudes lift together. They got the same trainer, et cetera. Am I right, Steve?
6'0 strength, I think, ran by Matt McChesney, who used to be offensive lineman for the Denver Broncos. Matter of fact, Chris Fox was a part of that same, like, way back in the day. Yeah, being recruited out of Colorado, they all worked out with him. A couple other kids this cycle who ended up, actually, one ended up at Ohio State, one ended up at Michigan State, George Fitzpatrick, Braden Miller, both also worked out. It's basically, if you're an offensive lineman in Colorado, you're working out with Matt McChesney at some point, it feels like. There's always some kind of connection there. But yeah, Connor Jones, longtime commit, never wavered. Really one of those guys overly passionate about being a part of the class. I think a guy that, if he pans out, could be a fan favorite type guy, just for that alone. I mean, those kind of guys always really resonate with the fans. Not a day one guy, definitely. I think he's one that's going to have a little ways to go. But as Brian noted, and I fully agree with this theory, I think it's, and I say this as, you know, worked for a company that ranks kids, guy that commits early, who is very underranked to begin with and stays solid, there's no drama in his recruitment, a lot of times it stays static throughout. Maybe a bump or two throughout if they go to some camps, or that, you know, they go to like an Under Armour or one of those types of camps. But more often than not, things usually stick somewhere around where they're at. And I think that's where it is with Connor Jones, because he originally committed when Warner was still here. You know, there was plenty of time for Michigan to really maybe cool if Sherrone Moore didn't feel the same way. And they didn't. I mean, they made sure to keep that one solidified immediately when Moore took that job. And I think that says a lot about where they think he could possibly be down the road on the outside.
Then the last guy, we've mentioned Connerly a little bit, but then the transfer center from UVA, whose name is currently escaping me.
Olu Oluwatimi.
Right. Michigan hosted him on an official visit. Remington finalist, the guy who can sub in for the starters, hopefully pretty seamlessly. That, I believe, coming out of that visit, there was a lot of optimism on Michigan's part.
There is. Yeah, I think there's some decent optimism. I think it was interesting. He visited Clemson after visiting Michigan, as Tony Elliott left Clemson to go to Virginia, where he originally came from. Kind of a weird dynamic there. I actually think it's either Michigan or he may go back to Virginia. They're really trying hard with him, as they would. I mean, there's no reason for them not to try to get him to come back. But if I had to pick right now, I think I would pick Michigan. I wouldn't say crystal ball strong necessarily, but I think I would go with Michigan, or at least lean Michigan right now. And yeah, would be huge. A Remington finalist. I mean, you can't do much better than that. As a probably a 1 year plug until Greg Crippen is ready to maybe take that position. So yeah, I mean, you add him into the fold, and I mean, you're a seamless transition. Really, I agree. Maybe probably a kid who's probably got more upside than what, as great as Vestardis has been this year, maybe a guy with more upside at that center spot next year.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and talk about the defensive front seven.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing in one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Yeah,
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up. You can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirt.com.
Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president at Peak Wealth Management. We have a lot in common. We both went to Michigan. We're both huge fans, but I'm concerned about how much time you're spending on Michigan football recruiting. This could be time spent with me poring over your cash flow and Roth conversion strategy. How are these Roth conversions going to get done with you spending all your time and energy on MGoBlog looking at the next five-star recruits? Hey, all kidding aside, if you're addicted to MGoBlog and you want to outsource some of your financial planning to an expert, consider us, peakwm.com/MGoBlog. At Peak, we work with people in a variety of situations. Some of our clients are young professionals looking to optimize their savings and investments. For young people, time is the key. Some of our clients are super affluent trying to figure out when they can retire. Some are high net worth retirees looking for a second opinion on how their money's working for them. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Under name, image, and likeness group licensing agreements, college athletes can now earn money. Still, the indirect consequence has many athletes chasing money, losing valuable study time for classes, practices, and games. As a group sponsor, you can offer a minimum of $100 in a one-time payment, or $20 or more per month on your credit card. Monthly payments by supporters, alumni, and season ticket holders of $20 or more will help athletes tremendously. Being a student athlete is not easy. It's hard. And until now, athletes were not allowed to work to make extra money while on a scholarship. On TeamFanClub.com, sponsors can make it easier for their favorite team or coach with a simple commitment to a group licensing agreement. Group licensing benefits all scholarship players, not just the starters. It provides fairness for all athletes who practice and train together for games. It provides security for players to stay at your school and not go into the transfer portal. Support student athletes today and sponsor a team at TeamFanClub.com.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, MichiganLawGrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue.
Oh, well, hi, hey there, hello. Have you got some place to go?
Well, I've got some time and I would love to take you out.
I've got two nickels to my name.
Well, hey, my story sounds the same, but I'll find some way to show you what life's all about.
Welcome back to the MGo Radio Signing Day Special. We now turn to the defense, and we'll start off with the guy who signals a definite philosophy change in Michigan recruiting, and that is Kenneth Grant, who is a planetoid nose tackle who had Wisconsin and Ohio State offers. Wisconsin runs a 3-4, and this is one of those guys who's going to show up in 3 years on their front and just not move ever.
Yeah, everyone said mammoth. The word mammoth got thrown around so many times, I wondered if he was asking people to do it.
I love his upside. I mean, quick off the ball too, so not just a big guy. I think there's some pass rush ability there with him. Another thing that'll be more of a pattern on the defensive side of the ball is Michigan ended up with when getting Sab too at the we'll talk about him later. End up getting a lot of the guys that the new staff identified right away, and as far as like top type targets, Kenneth Grant has been a top target basically since Mike McDonald stepped on campus. And Ohio State kind of tried slow playing him a little bit, didn't work. And you know, Wisconsin was there. You mentioned Wisconsin was there. He's a great fit in that defense too. But yeah, Michigan, another one of those guys. I think we have him at a 90. I'd probably have him a little bit higher than that. I think there's more upside there than a 90. I think they have a tendency to rank the really, really big guys a little bit lower, because it's all about NFL upside. I think he's a little bit better than that. And yeah, I mean, really, yeah, definitely shifts it. Definitely a shift in focus up front, but I think for the better. I think he's a potential stud, and we'll see what kind of shape he gets in early. But really, is a guy I think could find a role faster than maybe people expect.
Yeah, and he's a guy who the Wisconsin program was apparently just crushed to not get because he's exactly their archetype. And so if Michigan's going to actually run more 3-4 stuff down the road, he would be a key point. And then the other defensive tackle Michigan picked up was one of my favorite prospects in the class, Mason Graham out of Anaheim, California. Boise State commit who flipped to Michigan and then proceeded to have a monster senior season. And this is another one, like one where it's like, yeah, his composite ranking isn't as good as his 24/7 ranking. And I always, for guys who rise late, I always think that latter ranking, the 24/7 one, is probably going to be more accurate.
One of my favorites in the class too. He's one that will rise if he gets a national chance. I talk about a couple other guys that I think could have a shot, like Loveland, maybe Lorenzetti, like those kind of guys. Mason Graham will keep going. Our analysts love him. I know Greg Biggins has seen him live multiple times. He said he's the best lineman on either side of the ball in the state of California this year. I think that says a lot. Servite plays a brutal schedule. They play everybody in California, you know, so he's gotten extensive reps against legit players. I mean, there's a 2024 for modern day that he dominated. I mean, he had a really, I think they ended up losing, but modern day has like 12 five-stars on their team. He had a huge day, may have been the best player on the field in that game. You know, so I think he was one that people, I think fans find, like, he committed, he flipped from Boise State. I think fans like, he's one of those guys you see on film where like, okay, he's better than he was ranked. I think it was 87 or something at the time. He's like, he looks better than that. Then the ranking starts to follow. Then people realize this dude's a really important part of this class for them. And he became that almost overnight, you know, just as they continue to put, they put such a big emphasis on up front this cycle. And yeah, that's why you have USC, Oregon making late pushes for him because I think they know, I mean, Lincoln Riley made a really strong push for him in the last week and a half or so. And actually got him on campus. You know, Harbaugh and company had to go basically. I don't think he was ever really truly wavering, but they made sure to get there right away to say, "Hey, no, we need you. We want to lock this up." I talk about Grant being a potential early guy. I really think Graham might play next year. I think he might get an opportunity next year. I think he's going to be in the conversation. He's that good. So that's we've been told that they have that feeling with him that he could. Again, no guarantees, obviously, but. But really, this is the kind of prospect we're talking here. I think another guy could be a top 100 type kid if he gets more. I don't know what more opportunities he could get given the schedule he plays, but you know, maybe get him in front of an Army game type deal where there's all these national guys. He shows out, maybe bumps up even further. Either way, whether he does or not, I think he's one, like you, Brian, I'm with you. I think he's one of my favorite prospects in this class for sure.
Yeah, he's kind of an instant Ryan Glasgow. And in fact, he's got Ryan Glasgow's exact push-pull move. I was like blown. I was like, where have I seen this? Oh yeah, I watched a whole bunch of film on Ryan Glasgow when he was at Michigan, and like that's one of the most direct comps I've ever seen when I was doing this.
Yeah, the edge position, Michigan picked up a big commitment in Derek Moore from St. Francis. There was remember the rule they made for Devin Bush where it's like if you have a guy who comes to a school in a non-coaching position, you can't recruit from that school from 2 years. Seems ridiculous in the NIL world, but it still existed. And apparently there was some red tape Michigan had to get around, Steve.
It seems like it. I mean, I know, you know, Ole Miss was the other school that was really recruiting him. I know they were kind of wondering how Michigan was able to get around it. My response was, I don't know if you guys remember Jeffrey Mba, the JUCO that they offered a couple months ago. That got nixed immediately because of his relationship with Biff Poggi. Michigan had to back off. Mba would have been a part of this class if there hadn't been any of that red tape. So I'm just going with the logical route. We don't know the exact details yet, but I don't think Michigan would have even hosted him, let alone taken a verbal. And actually, he sent in his letter of intent while we were recording, gotten this far without doing all the homework to make sure they could get it done, you know? So I mentioned Clemens earlier. This is another one where if Michigan doesn't win the Big Ten and beat Ohio State, I don't know if they're maybe the school, just even with the connections to St. Francis Academy, I don't know if they're the school that just immediately pops to the forefront here. Huge upside kid, a big-time prospect, you know, had everybody after him, was originally committed to Oklahoma. Like I said, Ole Miss was kind of the other program that came in late and made a big run at him. I know they were really, really high on him. I think they think he's definitely a top 100, like top 50 type prospect. So, yeah, really, edge recruiting's been kind of weird this cycle, especially when you consider how great Michigan is at the edge position. But Moore is a guy, you know, 6'4", 250. I suspect they'll bulk him up a little bit and maybe that Hutchinson-type role, something along those lines for him.
Yeah, I just want to point out, Poggi never actually got to coach him because he didn't because they didn't have football that year, right? So, like, Poggi was there, but I don't think he was ever actually got to coach him. I think that's how they got – my guess is that's how they got around it because – They would only have overlapped in 2020, and they didn't play.
Right.
Yeah.
I just don't know if, like, because he literally didn't coach him on the field, you know, like, where that comes in. Like, I'm sure they probably worked out he was enrolled at the school while Poggi was technically the sitting head coach, you know. But I suspect it has to be something along the lines of what you just said, Seth. I just don't know for sure if that's how they were able to get around it. But it's got to be something along those lines, I think.
Sure.
Yeah, so the rest of the edge stuff is a little bit up in the air because Ethan Burke flips to Texas on signing day, and then Michigan is not getting an LOI from Kevontae Henry, who is really tight with Courtney Morgan, who left for Washington. So he's going to wait until the late signing day, and I don't think people are particularly optimistic about Michigan's ability to keep him in this class.
I would say it's shaky for sure. But I think there was some sentiment that he might have just flipped and signed with Washington. I mean, he did officially visit there last weekend. So in a way, the fact he didn't decide to sign today and is going to wait till February might not be the worst thing for Michigan. I think the question now is, you know, Michigan will gauge where things are at and then maybe either expand their board at the edge spot or go all out to try to sign him and either, you know, save an edge spot for next cycle, go after somebody in the portal, which is obviously always an option now, or, you know, maybe take a flyer on somebody late. I would suspect the last option would be the least likely. I think they'll either go all out for Henry, save it next cycle, or go for somebody in the portal.
Do you think any of the linebackers in this class are potential edges, or is that just
We've been counting Pollard as one.
Yeah, Micah Pollard was one. I think their thought was, depending on how they did at linebacker, I think that they thought Pollard was a guy that could potentially be that person. So he'd be the one to watch there. I think getting Jimmy Rolder may have allowed them to give Pollard a stronger look at that edge spot for sure. I still think they might prefer a more pure edge guy. Kevontae Henry is really good. He's raw, but he's very, very good. I think they're going to really try to keep him locked up. You know, only Michigan would lose a guy due to a relationship with a prospect and the director of player personnel. But here we are. You know, I mean, they're going to have to fight for sure for him.
All right. So the linebacker level, Michigan, as you mentioned, Michigan picks up Jimmy Rolder out of Chicago. Guy ranked just inside the top 300. But another guy, Wisconsin, was devastated to lose. And if you're asking me what is the number one thing I want to hear about linebacker recruit, it's like Wisconsin was into this guy,
and so was Ohio State. They had him on campus for the Penn State game in late October, and it was only a couple weeks after that that Michigan locked him up. So he was a guy that rose late in the cycle because his junior season was washed out due to COVID. He didn't go to any camps because he was a really good baseball player who played 70 some games a season in the springs into the summer, was committed to Illinois for baseball. I mean, a really, really good multi-sport athlete. So he was kind of under the radar, and a lot of programs, in my understanding, were curious about him entering this season. And then kind of all of the hype was confirmed on the field, and he had a great season. He plays in the Catholic League in the Chicago area where McCarthy played, that same league, not the same school, but just had a great season, rose up the ranks, suddenly got all the Big Ten schools interested, a couple SEC offers, but Michigan got in there and wrapped it up. And compared to the other two guys in this class who are speedier flyer types, Rolder's a little safer and more of like a traditional Josh Ross type linebacker rather than the Junior Colson model.
And thank God, too, sorry, just to jump in, that like there were so many linebackers this cycle that they were going after. You know, they wanted Lander Barton really bad out of Utah. I know he was impossible to pull out of Utah because he's like family there. Sebastian Cheeks was a guy they were after for a long time out of Chicago. Jeremy Patton was a guy they went down to the wire with. He ended up at Baylor. Josh Burnham is a guy who I heard literally had a picture of Lloyd Carr in his family's house, and Michigan still didn't get that. And Notre Dame managed to walk away with him. So, like, there were so many inside linebackers that they were after this cycle, and every single one of them just popped off somewhere else.
So we briefly touched on Pollard, who's the nephew of Braylon Edwards, by the way. Should we complete our discussion of that guy?
And he's
Bryce. Bryce. My story with Pollard comes from Bryce's experience with him. He watched when Michigan was recruiting. You remember Brandon Jennings last cycle at Sandalwood in Jacksonville. They played Bartram Trail. Actually, there's two similar stories about both Pollards from different members of our staff. Went to watch Brandon Jennings, who had a good game, but I remember Bryce's reaction coming out of that game was they got Bartram Trail has this kid named Micah Pollard. This was before, because Pollard, again, is another example of a guy didn't have an offer from Don Brown's staff. Really, I don't think was really a name we'd even really knew much about. But after watching Brandon Jennings live, Bryce made a comment like, man, Bartram Trail, this kid named Micah Pollard, who looks really, really, really good. He looked like the best player in the field. And sure enough, I mean, Micah Pollard was one of the first like five or six kids that the new staff offered. And the Braylon connection, I think, obviously played a huge role here, right? I know Auburn, you know, if you look at like who's the second place team in this recruitment, I'd say Auburn was probably the other team that Pollard was seriously considering. Lots of like there is versatility there. We talked about him being a potential edge if they want him to be. A very athletic kid. I think he's a little bit on the raw side overall as a linebacker prospect. But again, I don't necessarily think Michigan needs a year one guy at those spots. So I think there's time for him. But again, another really a guy that's very, very athletic for his size. I think that's his calling card over everything else.
So the other two linebackers in this class are ranked right around 1,000. So they're kind of like deep sleeper types. Deuce Spurlock is out of Alabama, fielded some SEC interest from Florida and Auburn, and also Clemson was looking at him late in the cycle, but decided to stick with Michigan, did actually get the Auburn offer. There's really not a whole lot else out there on him, though.
Yeah, he committed the same time as Kenneth Grant. If there is a super sleeper in this class, one that like, you know, a super low star, three star that Michigan plucked, he seems like the one. Like, as you mentioned, you know, there was a lot of interest at the very end, and I think Michigan had to do a lot of work and actually to hold on to him at the end, because some of the Southern schools that were looking at their classes at the end were not, were kind of casting about, and he was the first guy they really looked at. Seems to be a really smart player. I hate using Devin Gill because like it was that says something to us, and like that was a guy who Michigan had to build up. But he looks kind of like an automatic Devin Gill, like a guy who the coaches just adore because he knows the plays and he knows what's going on and just isn't going to make a lot of mistakes out there, and has a lot more athleticism than I think people realize. Steve, do you have more thoughts on that?
Yeah, sideline to sideline guy for them. Interesting recruitment. Michigan offered, kind of sat on it. He was ready to commit. They sort of cooled late because they thought they were getting that whole Jeremy Patton debacle. That was actually quietly one of the most interesting stories of the entire cycle. Patton commits to Baylor. Michigan kind of comes crawling back. Really a situation, you know, I think some kids in that position might have said thanks but no thanks, you know, but they had done such a good job on him early, I think, that he felt, you know, comfortable still sticking with Michigan. He had, who was it? Is it Reggie Ragland, the former Alabama linebacker? Was he still in the NFL? I think there was a connection between him and George Helo that Ragland really went to bat for Spurlock as a potential college player. And I think that was one of the big reasons why Michigan did decide to push forward. Also, obviously, they did their own eval on him, obviously. But that was another connection, I think, that really might have helped make Michigan feel more comfortable to go ahead and pursue here. I think they look at him as an upside guy for sure. I think he's got some – I agree, Seth. I think he's more athletic than what people maybe think. He's actually picked up some steam on our board as a sort of one of the sleeper of the year type or sleeper of the cycle type candidates. So I think some guys out there on our board who watch some film and see something they like in him for sure.
The last commit is Aaron Alexander out of Belleville, a guy who early in his career was a running back. And then he was ranked pretty low. He went to camp at Michigan. Michigan offered based on his performance there. And everybody's like, okay, let's see how this guy performs as a senior. And then he gets hurt.
Yeah, I'll
be interested to go ahead, Seth. Sorry.
No, I was saying I did the email on him and I didn't find anything that I could really talk about, so I was going to dump it on you anyway.
This was an eval based situation, mind you. To be clear, he hasn't signed yet. We'll see where that goes. But as a kid that Michigan worked out two or three times in a 3-week period, I want to say he was at the Ferris State camp over the summer. He came to Michigan twice. There's a lot of one-on-one eval work there that made them feel comfortable going forward with him. I think he had a good playoffs for Belleville this year. I think he maybe kind of finally emerged a little bit in the playoffs, but again, was a guy. I know their big thing with him was wingspan, athleticism, but I think definitely a more raw prospect than the other guys they recruited at linebacker for sure. But a kid that, you know, I think mentioned in his original verbal, you know, it was a dream school to play for Michigan or whatever. And you know, we know Michigan's relationship with Belleville has always been kind of down and down. So, you know, I think going in there and maybe getting a guy there would be beneficial to them. But like I said, we'll see. You know, he hasn't signed yet for whatever reason. So we'll just have to see how that kind of shakes out here the next couple days or so.
All right, we're going to take another break, come back, talk about the secondary, which is a banner recruiting class.
At Peak Wealth, we believe we can help you retire with confidence. It's Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner from
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. I graduated from Michigan in 2001 with an econ degree and founded Peak Wealth Management in 2014. And now we have over $240 million of assets under management. As a freshman in 97, winning the national championship in football and hockey didn't get any better than that. Both my wife and I lived in Bursley that year, and it's crazy because we never actually met while living in the same dorm, probably because she had a car and I had to ride the bus. But we named our dog Bursley anyway, and he's on the payroll here at Peak Wealth Management. At Peak, we're fee-based. We're your fiduciary, which means everything we recommend is always in your best interest. We partner with leading institutional money managers, focus on low fees, and make sure every client has a financial plan covering retirement, college, tax, estate, insurance, and cash flow. Simply put, we are
Peak Wealth Management,
your comprehensive financial coach. Book your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
The only thing we can be sure of about the future is that it will be absolutely fantastic. I'm thinking of the incredible breakthrough made possible by developments in communications.
Arthur C. Clarke's 1964 vision is now reality with SignalWire, a cloud platform that enables developers to build the applications that will reshape the future of communications.
These things will make possible a world in which we can be in instant contact with each other wherever we may be.
You can add cutting-edge, real-time video and audio to any product, website, or application with APIs and SDKs for developers of all skill sets. SignalWire is optimized for high quality and low latency communication functionality for video, voice, and text messaging capabilities.
Almost any skill could be made independent of distance. Men will no longer commute, they will communicate.
See for yourself at signalwire.com. Use code 2021 and receive $25 in developer credit. Go to signalwire.com.
SignalWire Communications OGs, original geeks of programmable communication.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734 734- 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for return lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Welcome back to MGR Radio 7.15? 13?
13, okay. I think, yeah.
All right, we are now getting on to the defensive back section, and we'll lead off with Will Johnson, a Michigan legacy, a five-star who Michigan absolutely needed to keep in this class. They fended off various suitors and now have a 6'3" legit cornerback to play with.
We're talking at the beginning of the year about whether we could get this guy suited up for the bowl game. Don't think that's happening, but that kind of talent. And, I mean, how badly do we need a five-star cornerback in the last several classes? And he is every bit of that. You know, you watch him play, he's more receiver than the receivers he's covering and tends to run their routes for them.
A high upside even for the 20th-ranked guy in the class. You know, he's got a lot of that stuff you can't teach at that position with that length and that athleticism, right? I mean, I think he's a guy that could be an impact player at safety, really, if they wanted him to. I mean, not that they want him to play safety, not that he should, but he could be an impact player at a few different spots in the defensive backfield. So, yeah, again, can't understate how important it is to have him, to have gotten him when they did too, because he did kind of play that role as sort of the face of the class. Put them in a couple of recruiting races that maybe they wouldn't have been in otherwise. And really, you know, yeah, the crown jewel of as you mentioned, Brian, really a banner year at defensive back for them. Really a guy that kind of encapsulates everything that they added at the position.
Cody Jones is a guy who's listed as an athlete, but everybody projects him to be a defensive back at Michigan. Out of Tennessee, one of a couple early commits in the class, so the other one didn't stick, but Jones did, and he's a guy who looks they like...
Get a little assistant right, analyst there, I see, Brian.
About Cody Jones while I go fix this crisis?
I mean, Cody Jones, the guy they had to fight for at the end there, too. I wonder, maybe you can shed light on this, or maybe it just stays quiet, but that, like, the flirtation with Damani Jackson at the end, because I think Cody Jones is ticketed for that nickel position, and Damani is a very similar player, maybe a little, like, plus version of that, but, you know, that's just for me, like, as far as what I'm talking about, like, that is what I'm talking about. Like, I love these kinds of players who just, he turns on a dime. Maybe a little underrated because he's a little short and squat, but I mean, he plays so hard. He's got, you know, all the intangibles. He moves so fluidly. And this is a guy that you see all over the SEC all the time when you're like, how come these guys have all these, you know, round two cornerbacks that Michigan can never get their hands on? And incredible that, you know, he was like a day one commit to Mo Linguist and he managed to stick around through the whole process.
Incredibly impressive, honestly, that they were able to hold on to him like the way they did. I mean, Tennessee had some mojo going, right? I mean, you know, a Memphis kid, you're going to listen to what Tennessee has to offer. Illinois, weirdly, was kind of the other team that was And what? So I don't really know where that, kind of came from. Like, he really did give Illinois a fair shake, though. I mean, he really did. He officially visited.
Well, there is their problem.
Right. Yeah. No. Maybe that.
You're going to show him champagne? What are you doing?
Well, they tell him to fly to Chicago for his official visit. Yeah. But no, I agree. I think that this was another one of those kind of quiet, important storylines today was Michigan's ability to hang on to him. I think it was a little up in the air for a while. They had to fight up until about a week and a half ago. He canceled his official to Tennessee. UT never went and home with him last week. I think they conceded last week. But up until that point, he originally was supposed to officially visit Knoxville on the weekend of December 3rd. You know, if he had made that visit, there really could have been some dramatics in this one. I think really big for Ron Bellamy, who played a big role in this one, to help solidify this one. Because I agree, Seth. I think he's an SEC defensive back. He's one of those types of kids. I think I described it perfectly. And as a guy, they like him in a few different spots. He's another very versatile piece, but in a completely different way than what Will Johnson is. He's the yin to Will Johnson's yang as far as that type of stuff goes, the versatility in the defensive backfield.
Miles Pollard, another kid at Tennessee, is another longer, lankier corner, I guess in the St. Juice mold, or I guess Vincent Gray too these days, since Vincent Gray is now pretty all right.
You could say Stribling. Stribling's all right as like our general count for that kind of player. Yeah.
And then so he's a guy who's probably going to be pushing guys into the sideline in press coverage and then using his length to defend fade routes, that sort of thing.
Yeah, if he had
so
four.
He's the other.
Yeah,
so,
sorry, Steve.
I wanted to tell this because I mentioned Micah Pollard earlier as Bryce going to see one prospect and coming out more impressed with the other. Josh Newkirk, a long time ago when Michigan was just recruiting Junior Colson, I don't think Colson had even committed yet. Almost the exact same deal. Whereas Colson was very impressive in his own right, as you would expect. But I remember him messaging the Slack saying, they have this kid named Miles Pollard. I have no idea why the hell the last defensive staff hasn't offered this kid yet. I mean, he looks exactly like what they would normally want. He'd already had like 15, 16 offers at that point. That's one that Mo Linguist really got the ball rolling on, honestly. He offered Pollard almost immediately. Again, another pattern we're seeing with these defensive signees. And it was one that I think when we brought him to light on our board, I know he's a guy that people were just pounding their fists for Michigan to offer and pursue, because there was that connection with Colson. You thought Michigan would have a really good shot if they got involved. So kind of funny for two of our guys to really almost sort of scout a pair of future Michigan signees before Michigan was ever really even in the race for either one of them. But yeah, Pollard had like 30 offers. You know, it's like Michigan signs a guy every cycle. I feel like one or two guys that are ranked, like, you know, Stuber was one that was like an 88 for the most of the cycle, but had like 31 offers, or Honigford had like 28, 29 offers, you know, and really didn't get talked about or get really rankings bump. I don't know if that's going to happen with Miles Pollard or not, but I know Steve Klinkscale loved him when he was at Kentucky. So that was actually the other wrinkle in this one, is Michigan might not have been able to make a better hire as it pertained to that recruitment than Steve Klinkscale, because I'd argue if Linguist had left and Michigan had replaced him with somebody not named Steve Klinkscale, Pollard may have well gone to Kentucky, honestly. So kind of a weird how it kind of worked out in the end for everybody. But yeah, great, great prospect. I really like him. I know our guys like him a lot too.
Yeah, I was going to say if he ran a 4.4 instead of a 4.5, he'd be Will Johnson. He's got that kind of length. He's got that kind of approach to the game. And no offense to Newkirk, because you know, his scout did well, but like everyone, I think, watched that game between IMG and their Tennessee team. Forget, they're blanking on the name of their team.
Ravenwood. Yeah.
Ravenwood, yeah. Because at that point, Colson was committed, and so was JJ. So we got to see like our two five-stars going against each other. And everyone who watched that game, expecting to go and watch the two Michigan commits, were like, who is this Miles Pollard dude? Because he like knocks out the running back from IMG who's going to Penn State. And on the apps, like the very next play, they try to hit him on a fade to the end zone, and he just like bats that thing away after running the route for the receiver. And I think Sam Webb was banging the table after that one too on WTK. So there were a lot of Michigan fans who scouted Miles Pollard before the football team really got involved.
That was Ja'Cory Brooks that he locked up in that game too, who caught a huge pass mm-hmm. in the SEC title game for Alabama last week against Georgia after Jameson Williams went down. I mean, that's the kid that Pollard locked up on national TV, had a really, really good performance against him. So, you know, he's shown it.
At safety, Michigan did a lot of work late here, again, benefiting from some coaching turnover at other programs. They flip Keon Sabb from Clemson after Brent Venables leaves. Kid who goes to IMG Academy, bigger safety, already a 200-pound kind of guy, 6'2". People don't know exactly how fast he runs, so he might he's going to the UA game. That might be sort of a hinge point for his rankings. But a guy who is the kind of safety you could maybe put over a slot receiver and expect that to go decently.
Yeah, I mean, I love Sabb. Brian, you're going to hate this comp, except for the fact that he's probably going to be a hybrid like linebacker here. But Cato June is like the first thought that came to my mind. And I know that you imagine Cato June, you think of like balls going over his head. But before his injury and before that, and afterwards, remember, he was like an all-pro linebacker. So
Yeah.
I mean, imagine that player.
I don't want to slander Cato June, but what I do remember about Cato June is the time like he was celebrating over a Tennessee player after the guy had picked up 25 yards, and Cato June didn't even tackle him. Someone else tackled him. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, anyway, that kind of player where he's just like an incredible athlete who looks like a running back out there, which is why I think people... I mean, his ranking fell a little bit at the end, but he was, you know, a IMG kid, national prospect, was ranked in the top 10 for most of the cycle until the end, and I think that's probably because they looked at him, and Clemson recruited him to play that hybrid role, but I think they're looking at him that way because he's linebacker size but still moves just like a safety. Steve, I don't know if you agree.
I a big safety. Who Michigan, I think he's another one. You know, I know we always talk about versatility with Don Brown, but I think we've seen more effective versatility already under Mike McDonald. I think Sabb is another one of those guys. They feel like there are a few different spots. Not moving back in the defensive backfield, maybe more moving up and as a potential could be in the box in certain scenarios, like just different ways they could use him. And again, another guy – he was a top target for both defensive staffs. Michigan really did well to kind of stay on this one. That's one that I'll be interested to get the backstory on to see when, you know, contact really reignited. I suspect Clemson struggling a bit may have reopened that door. And then Venables leaving to me is when this one shifted fully to Michigan. If Venables had stayed, I think it would have been a lot more interesting. I think he may have signed with Clemson. I believe he even told, our Clemson affiliate that's the case, whether that's true or not, either way, you know, Michigan, again, Ron Bellamy, big role in this one too. He has really stepped in and been a huge asset for Michigan on the recruiting trail. And like I said, I thought this one was locked up when Venables left for Oklahoma.
Zeke Berry, another late add after Michigan beat Ohio State, guy out of California. And as Steve has been mentioning a lot, another guy with a lot of positional versatility, you know, a guy who probably projects best as a defensive back, but corner or safety is kind of up in the air. And those are the guys that Mike McDonald seems to be prioritizing so he can disguise his defenses.
Yeah. I mean, Barry's a guy I like quite a bit. He has a lot on his tape that reminds you in some ways of the Dax Hill thundering sack against Graham Mertz that knocked him out of that game as a blitzing defensive back. But he also lays the boom in his tape just all over the place, whether it's in run defense or just thumping guys up in the air going up for balls. He's risen up the rankings. Some people think he's still undervalued and could be higher, even though he's already in most places inside the top 100. Plenty of athleticism, you know, not quite as freakishly athletic as Dax, obviously, but a lot of versatility, hits hard, you know, can do a lot of different things. A really good piece, a Swiss Army knife piece for Mike McDonald. He did also return punts in high school, and so whether it's returning punts or thumping guys on special teams, I think there's a path for him to play early on in his Michigan career.
He reminds me of Jabril.
Yeah, that's the other one.
He's not at that level, he doesn't have the twitchiness maybe that Peppers had, and he's not quite as big. But you turn on his film and you watch, like, the thing I always remember about Jabril's high school film was just how comfortable he looked on the football field, like just a guy who knows what he's doing. I think if you watch Zeke Barry's senior film, I think you'll see a lot of similarities there. Just a guy who makes the right decisions, but also has that elite athleticism to basically maximize the product of those correct decisions, I guess would be the best way to put it. Because I think he's a guy that would succeed on the offensive side of the ball at the college level as well if he was given an opportunity. You know, and that was one of the reasons that Jabril kind of came to mind for me, was because I remember, I think you go back and watch Jabril Peppers' senior film, I think a lot of people thought he should have played on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, just because of some of the highlights that he had on the offensive side. So I think Zeke Barry, probably my favorite player in this class. I think, you know, I just love what this guy brings to the table. And another guy possibly could find his way onto the field in some capacity. As Alex said, too, there's that special teams wrinkle also, I think, is quietly very, very valuable with a kid like him.
Finally, Damani Dent, Florida safety, who is committed to Akron, went to Oregon's camp, picked up an offer there, got an offer from Pitt, and then Michigan kind of threw their hat in the ring, got an official visit from him, and then he commits in October. A guy who's ranked barely inside the top 1,000 right now, has moved up about 500 spots from earlier in his recruitment. But a guy who is another developmental prospect who the new defensive staff identified as a guy that they really wanted.
Yeah. Steve, what are you, and by you I mean the recruiting industry, doing? Because Damani Dent should not be ranked okay. A three-star. I mean, the film is out there now, and like I know he only got to see a couple camps, but it's like he's Dax Hill without the rankings.
Best player at Oregon's camp over the summer, regardless of position, is what we were told.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon absolutely went all out for him. Actually, in a way, sort of surprised that Michigan beat Oregon, because he went all the way out there to camp, you know, and then Michigan didn't have the cachet, had it, you know, during the summer that Oregon may have had. You know, it was like almost a little bit of a surprise that when he picked Michigan the way he did, but had Florida and Miami. Cristobal, obviously, right, goes to Miami, loved him at mm-hmm. Oregon. Of course, they're going to try to make a late run at him to finish. Yeah, I agree. I, you know, I mean, it's not my fault, Seth. you know, we pass names along for guys that try to get a little bit of a ranking. I agree. I think, you know, the film is fresh, right? His new film is pretty yeah. fresh, or has it been out for a while. That was the one thing, like, there wasn't a lot on him before whenever this just came out. And I'm wondering, you know, Andrew Ivins is the guy that does our, sorry, Andrew, outage is the guy that hasn't bumped him yet, I guess, but
right.
but he's the guy in charge of our like Southeast/Florida recruiting, you know, and I know he likes him. And again, it might be with some of these guys, maybe a matter of getting an opportunity to do anything in front of our guys or in front of any analysts and staffs or whatever.
Yeah. In fairness to Andrew, he's bumped him three spots literally every time you guys do a re-rank. So I think that might be like the limit that he's allowed to. So
he's on his way. Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. Well, we'll see. I agree though. I think another one, he'd be an easy sleeper pick based off of just off of his ranking and rating. Right. I mean, mm-hmm. I think the challenge for picking a sleeper would be picking someone besides him, sort of like when picking Quiddy Pay. Right. Back in the day, it's like he was like ranked like an 83 or an 84. It was like, well, it doesn't really count, you know, to pick a guy that's ranked that low. You got to find someone else. So,
All right. Well, that's the class. I think we're going to take a break, come back, and sort of talk holistically about what happened.
Hey, so I have like insurance and stuff, but I don't really like know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy, his name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance and he was like, yeah, your coverage sucks and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it.
I also I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually like reads MGo Blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together and you will save money on your insurance and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease.
This is Matt Demarest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGLO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them. You should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
If you want to see where our post-game podcast happens, or if you need a spot to land in Ann Arbor, check out 4M, Prentice Partners' beautiful brand-new flagship property at 830 Henry Street in Lower Burns Park and across the bridge from the Big House. Their 11 spacious 6-bedroom, 6-bath suites feature state-of-the-art digital capabilities and are laid out for comfortable, efficient collaboration. You can also rent a 4M unit for shorter stays, say if you want to come to town for a football weekend. I want to add myself that they're also taking over Lucky's. We're really excited about their plans for that space. So if you're by the stadium, swing by 830 Henry or visit Prentice4M.com.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our 3 convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 7.13. We're going to call it that. So Michigan is in the top 10 in this class, sort of generally towards the back half of it, 9, 8, depending on who you point to and like exactly how the various pieces fall out. We had some questions that we prepared for a 5-question, 5-answer sort of thing. Where are the 5 stars, Seth? What happened?
I think that was a general question, like, you know, Michigan is in the playoffs, our Big Ten champions. Is that going to work out for us this cycle? And I was just really way too late for this cycle. Like, this cycle was mostly recruited during COVID, and then it was the last half of the cycle was after a 2-4 season. So. Like it,
I well, yeah, and pretty after impressive the Ohio State game, they had what, like 3 weeks to make hay. They made an awful lot of hay. I think they did an absolutely great job of capitalizing on the sudden, like, oh, they won the Big Ten thing,
right?
But by the time you get along, you can only get back on guys that you're already in on, and because of the state of the program, Michigan wasn't super appealing to the high end guys in the way that they might be. I don't know, next year.
Yeah, like Sab is probably the only one that they. Well, Sab and Clemens, I guess, are guys that they really, I think, lost interest in Michigan because of the 2-4 season, and then got back because they, you know, rebounded so resoundingly. But like you said, like, this is probably not even the next class is going to be as affected by as the class after that, because kids are already starting to make their decisions for 2023, and Michigan, if they, you don't want to get on those 5-star recruitments, you have to get on those really early. And so,
well, yeah, but they're always in on some guys, and it probably will be an easier sell for those various guys. So we'll right. see. I think you get the bump next year, and we'll see how it goes. How quickly does the secondary class start seeing the field?
I mean, obviously, you know, you're going to see, Johnson out there pretty soon. You know, no offense to the current corners, but like, you know, Turner was the guy who popped this year, and he still needed help. He needed to play back. And then Gray also, you know, limited guy, and they really didn't have anyone behind them after Green went down, and Green was with guys, but had a hard time playing the ball. I don't think that cornerback depth chart is one that Johnson's going to have that hard of a time ascending. The rest of the guys, you know, they lose two safeties, so I don't know. Do you see any of these guys starting next year?
Well, I kind of feel like Moten is probably going to be ahead of them just because he's been on the field quite a bit, and Rod Moore,
right?
That's a guy that they clearly rate. But like, if you're asking me who's filling the Dax Hill role, I don't think that anybody currently on the roster I feel super comfortable with, because that asks an awful lot out of you physically. And so mm-hmm. you might be looking at Sab. You might be even looking at Will Johnson. He has that flexibility. So yeah, I'll be interested to see what that sort of third safety looks like when the box safety role is being deployed. I think it could well be a freshman.
It just might take time, right? I mean, we didn't see Rod Moore, and then suddenly by 2/3 of the way through the season, we're like, oh, that's Rod Moore. And then he was starting basically against Ohio State. So it could take just a little bit of time for a Barry or a Sab to come through with that position, but it could get there.
Yeah. The other spot where you see a lot of attrition is defensive end, probably. And Michigan loses one of their inside linebackers. Do we have any candidates in this class to step forward sort of immediately?
Rolder, maybe?
I'm not sure. Yeah, Rolder would be Rolder's the first name that popped into my head as a guy that might get an early look. I think Pollard, Spurlock have a little bit longer to go. Defensive end, I mean, you know, Derek Moore just kind of burst back onto the scene here in the last couple of weeks. So I think we'll probably ask around a little bit more on how they feel about his immediate upside before we project him, even though he's, you know, top 100 type kid. They feel like they have guys to come in that are already on the roster there. Maybe it's not as an uphill a climb for guys on the current roster as it is at some of the other positions. So nobody jumps off the mat to me. Probably the interior, even though they look good in the interior next year, this is how heavy you like to rotate with Grant and Graham are guys, I think, that may have, like I already mentioned, Mason Graham is somebody they think can play right away. I wouldn't, again, conditioning, shape, wherever, whatever playing weight they want Grant at, I think those are two guys to definitely watch on the defensive front.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, they played Whitley this year. They played Spate this year. Those are two guys that I think probably are not coming back next year. I don't know if Spate's got some more eligibility, but I'm sure Whitley doesn't. But like those are positions
Whitley,
that they like
to fill. Whitley,
I think he does. Really?
Yeah,
no way.
Whitley has another year.
No way! Guy's as old as I am.
Well, you know.
Okay.
Courtney Morgan's departure might cost Michigan Kevontae Henry, which is obviously a problem since they don't really have a whole lot of depth at edge in this class. Do you think that affects them with Connerly?
I mean, it's got to, right?
It doesn't help. Yeah. I still like Michigan there right now, though. I think the other relationships he's built will supersede. I think the bigger question with Connerly is USC and not so much Courtney Morgan, but just the new Washington staff, if they can make any kind of dent in that recruitment. I think those are bigger questions. You know, yeah, Morgan leaving, not good, but it's not the death blow I think many thought it might be of that recruitment. Because, yeah, I mean, Pacific Northwest is an area where he really had a lot of connections, really built a lot of connections there. But again, I know Michigan feels like they showed enough up front and have done enough on the field to remain a very attractive option for Connerly. I think Connerly's family is all about Michigan, really. I think if it was up to them, I think he may have even signed during the early period, really. So, yeah, it doesn't help, but I don't think it hurts nearly as much as people maybe thought, myself included, when the news first broke or when we first found out he was going to leave.
Yeah, you know how I just want to throw this out there about Courtney Morgan real quick. You know, our understanding is that the Kevontae Henry thing and reading online is pretty related to Henry specifically. You know, it's not really something I think you can extrapolate to lots of prospects, that the family was pretty tight, you know, with Courtney Morgan, and they felt good about that relationship. So I think outside of that, it's not going to be a huge loss, especially if Michigan can get someone in that role pretty quickly who picks up the torch.
Yeah, so USC's class is currently six kids, one of whom is a kicker. So, I mean, I hope that factors in, because there's no way they're going to be able to put together a particularly competitive team the next couple of years, because their class last year, well, they had a good class last year, but then the year before it was like 63rd. So there's just going to be a pretty big deficit of talent on that team in terms of like who's competing nationally. I think Michigan looks like a better bet. So hopefully that impacts some kids. All right. So what does Michigan's finish look like? Are they adding anybody? We talked about Connerly, and we talked about the Virginia center, the Arizona State running back. So those three guys are on the board. Is there anyone else out there who could possibly come up as a person of interest over the past the next couple months?
I mean, I'd like to
Go ahead, Seth.
No. I keep doing it to each other because I don't see your video. I can't see when you're about to start.
No, that's my fault.
Steve, why don't you answer?
Steve, go ahead.
I think a lot of it depends on how they feel about Henry, right? I think that's really what's going to be the big question there, because I would think they're going to want some kind of edge. You know, I think they'd prefer it be him, but I think, you know, either way, I think it's a spot that they want to try to fill, you know? So right now it's basically Connerly, the two transfers, and then insert edge here again, Kevontae Henry being maybe the best case scenario, unless there's a portal entry or somebody that really jumps out. You know, I suspect that there's that kid from Albany. I think Jared Verse is his name, has been a really, really hot name in the portal lately. I'm kind of interested to see if Michigan throws their hat in that ring at all. I think USC, Miami, Tennessee, a few other programs have offered him as a name that we've been keeping an eye on a little bit. But either way, it's very compact now. I think the Virginia transfer, I think, is going to make a decision by the end of this week. Trey Adams, the running back from Arizona State, I think he may go a little bit longer. But yeah, it's very compact now. I think the vast majority of the class has been complete. And I think for Michigan, as always, I mean, I think that's your best case scenario. You want to get as much of it locked up as possible. That way you can move on to the next cycle.
All right, lightning round, best player.
Who do you want to go first, Brian?
best player, Seth.
Will Johnson. Will Johnson's Alex. Incredible.
Darius Clemens.
Ooh. Steve.
Zeke Berry.
I go Will Johnson. Best player still on the roster in 4 years, not because they went to the NFL, not because they got hit by a car. Seth.
Tyler Morris, if he's still on the roster in 4 years.
Alex.
Kenneth Grant.
Ooh, like that one. Steve.
Colston Loveland.
It's a good one, too. Right. Yeah.
I'm going Mason Graham. Most underrated. Seth.
I mean, Miles Pollard's such a slam dunk.
No, you have to say Damani Dent.
It's Damani Dent, but like you guys threw that whole thing on there like you made it too easy. So, yeah, it's Damani Dent. It's obviously Damani Dent.
Alex.
Lorenzetti.
Steve.
I got to say Damani Dent, too. Try to come up with a different name, but I agree with Seth.
I got Amorian Walker.
Sure, that's a really good one.
Mm-hmm. All right, biggest dub in the recruiting class. Seth.
I guess Keon Sabb. I mean, knocked out Clemson, knocked out Georgia at the end. Ohio State was rolling. So that's a pretty big win.
Alex.
Yeah, I think it's got to be Sabb. I mean, those are big, big, big boy schools.
Steve.
I think getting Darius Clemens is a bigger indicator of success on the field paying off. So I'm going to say Darius Clemens. They were dead in the water in that one.
Can I go with just this close in general? Like, sure. This looked like a class that was going to be the back half of the top 20 and had 1 5-star, and then there wasn't a whole lot of depth there. And then over the course of a month or two, they had more. They had Sab, they had Clemens, they had Barry. They keep a couple of guys who are pretty important. They had Orgy, like they had Walker. Like, this was a close that it's not the kind of close that we usually see from Michigan, right? For Michigan, it's like, okay, we're going to add a piece here and there. Our class is basically done. This class got rescued very late. And so they really took advantage of the momentum that they generated by beating Ohio State. All right. Thank you for listening to our marathon signing day podcast. Thank you, Steve, for hanging around for the full 2 hours. Sign up at 24/7. They have the best experts.
And 50% off right now, I believe, right?
50% off. Correct. Yep.
All right. And also, you know, enjoy the fruits of Michigan. It hasn't happened in a long time. Hopefully we won't have to wait quite as long the next time around because of this recruiting class. All right. See you guys.
In her home, she makes a ruska, vodka, vodka, makes it all night long. She makes a ruska, vodka, vodka, singing this crazy song. La da da da.
Is a mayor and a land surveyor with plans of his own. He hates a Ruska, he hates a vodka, banned it from his home. He hates a Ruska.